convoy duty here, you state that, what, 8 Canadian midshipmen were appointed to the HMS Minotaur.
Mm-hmm.
And based at Scapa Flow.
Yeah.
This would be in, what, July 1917?
No, that was in...
later, sir?
April. After we left the Roxburgh, we joined the Minotaur in Liverpool. Oh, and then we went up and we did one northern patrol. We had boarding steamers between the Shetlands and the Faroes to stop anything coming. We were supposed to stop them and search them for contraband from the States or raiders going out into the Atlantic. And nothing happened there, and that was, we never did another one. And then we were on this Norwegian business.
And you stayed on the Norwegian convoys right up to the end of the war, is that correct?
Yeah.
Based out of Scapa Flow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your midshipman's time would be coming fairly close to an end towards the end of the war, is that correct, sir?
Well, yeah, we were getting due. We were supposed to be promoted in 2 years, but we had to do courses first, short courses.
Mm-hmm. Now, these would be in England or back in Canada, sir? Do you recall?
I got back in.
I'm thinking
April.
Where the courses would be, though. Would it be in Canada or England?
Hmm?
The actual courses you would need to become a...
Done in England.
They'd be in Greenwich.
No, the Portsmouth mostly, the gunnery course in Whale Island, HMS Excellent, torpedo in the Vernon,
mm-hmm.
and at that time the Vernon was moored in harbor, an old sailing hulk, just like the Victory, and moored out there, and they had an explosive ship a safe distance away, about 300 yards away, where they taught about detonators and things, and gosh, the damn fools in there, they're just caught tossing these to each other, you know. And they played a joke on it. Had an old warrant officer, warrant lieutenant he was, and nearly scared the wits out of him. When one fellow would throw another one, the chap would drop something on the floor. Oh, they were crazy, those fellows.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, as well, sir, now, after the war here, you got 6 days in Paris, courtesy of the French government.
Mm-hmm.
And had, I gather, a lovely time.
Oh, yeah.
But you were also in the Victory Parade in London, is that correct?
Well, that was before we went to
before
France.
We went to
yeah.
What was that parade like, sir?
Well, Mingy was actually marching in it. I was doing officer watch on the bar, and I got off that day, and I climbed a little tree somewhere near the Admiralty Arch and sat up in the branches there and watched. And, oh, the bloody thing, it lasted for hours, you know, and then they'd come to a stop and wait for the people ahead to go ahead. And right where, opposite where I was, old General Pershing came to the stop, and, oh, he thought he was hell, he'd bow in like this to everybody either side. The only bloody admiral bowed, I think. It was funny, because our admiral, Levison, he couldn't ride, and he refused to get on the horse.
Oh, well, is that right?
Yeah. I forgot what he did.
But Admiral Mengi.
Yeah.
Marched in that parade.
Yeah, he was a midshipman.
Marching with the Royal Navy contingent, or was there a Royal Canadian contingent?
No, it was all one, the Allies.
Yeah.
It was
all one Allies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it must have been quite a sight. It must be.
Oh, gee, was it? Yeah.
That's interesting.
It was.
What's that program we got, sir?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, at the end of the war, what happens? You're posted back to Canada?
Well, the end of the war, when we returned... Well, the main thing about this trip to Paris was our trip to Reims. We were taken out to Reims Cathedral,
mm-hmm.
Which had never been captured by the Germans.
Oh, yeah.
And one end was shelled and broken in, and the cardinal, or whatever his rank was there, he was a hero. And the Marquis and Marquise de Polignac owned this chateau there, and they had 1 million bottles of champagne in their cellars, and they, French swore that as long as there was a drop of French blood left, the Germans would never get a drop of champagne. They didn't. Well, anyway, we sampled quite a lot of this. It was funny, we had this sat alongside one British, one French officer all around this table here, and they're supposed to work up a hymn of hate. He read all these atrocities done by the Germans, you know, but we had so much champagne that we just laughed. Anyway, we went out of this Fort Pompeo afterwards, and we were taken out in lorries, and all along the side of the road were boxes of stick bombs. They had a handle about that long, you know.
Oh, the German...
German ones.
Grenade, yeah.
Yeah, side of the road. And the driver of our lorry was a French bombardier, and the officers with us were artillery officers. And we wanted souvenirs, you see, and so we asked the fellow if they were safe. Oh, yes, the detonator had been removed. And oh, you like get one, you see. And artillery said, oh, try to dodge the road, try to dodge the road, do not touch. Well, that metal is bombardier, so he jumped out, and he got one whang on the road, all the way in the ditch. It didn't go off. Well, we got out there, and they gave a talk on Reims and the Battle of the Marne. We were on a little ridge, and apparently the Marne was in the hall on the other side. And then we went out to Fort Pompeo, and I've got a picture of about the earliest German tank they ever had, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a sheet metal like this.
Yeah,
and a little tiny pipsqueak of a gun up top.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of them. Oh,
yeah. Well, this one here. My brother-in-law was in the tank corps during the last war.
Mm-hmm.
I showed him this.
But well, when did you get back?
Well, anyway, to complete this story, when we came back, we were sent up the scaffolder to work all this excitement off and guide the German ships up there. And we were up there before they scuttled themselves. And about a week before, they started to paint the ships white. Everyone thought they were going to be returned to Germany. And we had an armed guard on the quarterdeck at night there with cutlasses and stuff like that. So, you know, they wouldn't try and board us or anything. And we turned over to the Revenge, the first battle squadron. We were the second battle squadron, Revenge, Royal Oak, and so on. And I turned over to Lieutenant. I had this German trawler that come up from the Dardanelles. And this R&R sub-lieutenant brought it up, being a German minesweeper down there. And it was full of bloody rats. Nothing worked. Steering gear wouldn't work. The anchor chain had worn a groove in the stem there that the horizontal links stuck. See, we were told to go off an anchor the first night when we did this, and we couldn't weigh anchor at all. So I had to get in the deep water and go like this and age alongside the barn. Well, anyway, it was so damn full of rats that I had a midshipman with me, and we have a bunk and a sort of little round glass plate from the deck let some light down, you know.
Yeah.
There's a bloody rat looking down at you. It's right over your bunk, too. Massive of them. So I complained about this. And so the admiral sent ashore for some live rat traps, and he ordered us to come alongside the barn's quarterdeck, and they shut all the doors of the superstructure onto the quarterdeck. He had a couple of Scotty dogs, and we got these things up in traps there, and they released them. The Scotties were tearing off and rat shooting over the side.
Is that right?
That's fact, yeah.
I've never heard of that.
Well, it's true.
The sport, or what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one way of getting rid of them, and I had some fun over it.
Well, 1919, in December, you go back to Canada on leave. This would be, what, your first major leave?
Yeah. Well, the story there, too, we... O'Cleary and I were still in the barroom, and we applied for leave together. See, I stayed on with Creary. I think he got sick for his before his exams, and he had to wait. And we decided we'd take our leave in the winter, get home for Christmas, 19. So we applied, two passages. Only one came through, and we tossed, and O'Cleary won, you see. And he went over the side and said, oh, I'll they were going to call her Mrs. Grant when they got there, because Harold Grant was my term. And he said, "Oh, tell Mrs. Grant you'll be along in about 2 weeks." And I said, "Okay." Well, we went to Portsmouth then, and by gosh, the second one came through. And gee whiz, I had a time leaving there. So I sailed from Southampton in the Caronia. Curry sailed in the Carmania, and Carmania and Captain Farragut had a famous action, both pretty well equal-sized armed merchant cruisers during war, and Carmania sank the Captain Farragut. Well, anyway, Curry disappeared off, and mine came through 2 or 3 days later when we were at Portsmouth. So I was so damn pleased. I hold my telescope over the side. I was sailing from Southampton, and holy smoke, the gunroom treated me to drinks, and then the wardroom, and by this time I was very
happy,
feeling no pain. And I remember our messman ran up to me and said, "Oh, beg pardon, sir, but could I have a trip ashore in your boat, again, a special boat for me, catch a train to Southampton from Portsmouth Station?" And I said, "Yeah, on one condition." I said, "You've got to put me on board that train for Southampton at Portsmouth." When he got there, I couldn't even see the hands of the town hall clerk. God, I was ill all the way there. And I got there, and this room, and fell on the desk. I didn't think he was going to let me in there, you know. And I had all the papers and things. So he said, "Okay, this is your room." I went on board, and I found that in this room there were two others coming. I hadn't arrived then. So I, one lower and an upper bunk. So I chose the one opposite to be on my own. It's a good thing I did. And these two came in. One was an Australian, the other was a New Zealander. And the Australian, I'd have been drunk for I don't know how long. And he got in his bunk and he had a loaded revolver there. And he got in there and he's waving this around and chapping the top of the bunk and trying to get out of the way.
They were both in the Navy, were they?
Well, the fellow in the other bunk was pretty good. He's a New Zealander. He wasn't like this. But anyway, the captain stopped this fellow's wine bill after this. Yeah, and
so you go back to Canada in the latter part of 1990?
This was in the... in
December?
No, April. Well, wait a minute, now the end of... Yeah. Yeah, December, I guess it was. 1919, yeah. Well, anyway, we were faster than the Carmania. Well, we had to go to Harvard. We picked up 2,000 Chinese labor battalion there. Under their own English officers spoke Chinese. And these fellows came on board, and we got rough weather a little way out, and they had a deck to themselves, and they were rolling over the deck, seasick as hell. And apparently they had a superstition that if they stuffed orange peel up their noses, it would cure it. And they did this, but not kept a terrible state. Well, anyway, we arrived.
Well, these were the Chinese labor that was brought out.
Yeah, labor behind the lines.
Yeah, brought up into France.
Yeah.
Brought them through Canada.
Yeah.
And then they were returned.
Yeah, many were brought through Canada. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know.
They were going back to Canada, presumably, since you were.
No. Well, they were on their way back to China.
Yeah, but I mean, they were in a ship going to Canada.
I'm not sure.
Well, your ship...
They weren't discharged at Halifax, I don't think.
I think what they used to do, they used to bring them by train right across Canada.
And they, probably, yeah.
Yeah.
And well, that's the last I saw of them, anyhow, yeah. Well, anyway...
So you get home...
We arrived 4 hours before the Carmania.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Carmania was being presented with silver plate by Jellicoe, who's in Canada then, to advise Canada on what kind of a navy to have post-war. And so she was allowed to dock first. Curry went up to Government House where the grounds were and said, "Oh, I got the first passage." And said, "Bonds will be along in about 2 weeks." Well, a couple of hours later, I rolled in there. And the old man Grant was the lieutenant governor. And he said, "Now then, young fellow," he said, I want you to come down as my ADC at this celebration there, this presentation. So we went down there, and God, there were all the high-ups in Canada, all aging to get, you know, good positions to look at the ceremony. It was in the lounge of the Carmania, and it was silver, a gold plate, Nelson's plate. And so this was presented, and then an ADC came around to me and said, the Admiral Jellicoe wants to see you. I said, what for? Oh, he wants to see you. So I went up there, and the Admiral said, are you as good a ragga player as your father was? And I said, I don't know, sir. I don't suppose so. Well, he and my father, they're in this comic picture, you see. Yeah, and they played rugby together.
But how did he know that you were there?
God knows. At the end, I got what a memory. I don't know at all.
I'll be
there. Yeah.
So do you stay in Halifax, or do you come up?
Well, Curry and I don't think we stayed long in Halifax. No, we got train passage over pretty soon, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Came back out here on leave. Well, then I talk about Henry Van Irving. My father, an old fellow, Algie Lloyd, he was in the fishery service, and he had a motor boat in Zeebrugger or Ostend, I've forgotten which.
Mm.
And my father arranged with him to take us up on a duck shooting trip, Johnson Strait. We went to Salmon River and another place. And after that, Curry asked me over to stay with them for over New Year.
Where did he live?
In Vancouver.
Oh, I see.
And I went over there, and we went to Bel Irving's New Year's Eve. And it was Henry Bel Irving, that's the father of the...
the lieutenant governor.
Yeah, what's his name? Budge. And Aeneas, who had been in the Air Force and been wounded badly, he was there.
Oh,
too.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. So we got out with Henry driving it. Just shows you how much traffic there was there New Year's Eve, how little. Well, Henry started buzzing this thing around. He turned circles on the icy streets, going one way and then another. We landed up the Vancouver Hotel. Gosh. And I think... who's the third one now? He's supposed to play rugby the next day.
Yeah. Well, then, you remain in Canada. You don't go back to the British Navy, I assume. Is that right?
Yeah, we did. After this
leave
in Canada here, yeah, we went, Trier and I went back to do these courses. There he was. After the war, now we went back. And we went to the Admiralty Report, and the commander of the Admiralty was always very decent to us with appointments. He asked us what we'd like. Well, I always applied for foreign stations. I didn't like staying around England too much. I had a lot of that now. And Curry said he liked to go to the West Indies. I think he got smitten with some girl in the West Indies, in Vancouver. That was it, yeah. I want to go in the West Indies, I'll chance of getting up here. And I said, well, I'd like to too, sir, but my reasons are not as important as Curry's. And when it came out, I got appointed to the West Indies in Korea. Where the hell did he go? I've forgotten now.
But now, your rank would be what at this point?
Well, when I did short courses, I was a lieutenant. On return to England from there.
You'd be a lieutenant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. But you get posted again with the British or Royal Navy down to the West Indies.
Yeah.
You've been in the Canadian Navy for about 4 or 5 years, and you're still not in the Canadian Navy. Of course, they didn't have much to
no,
be in.
The story of this was that Hibbard, now that's young Hibbard's here, older brother, you know, the Admiral Victoria.
Yeah.
Jimmy Hibbard's older brother, Godfrey Hibbard, who was at college with us, he was appointed to Calliope going out of the West Indies. And when they got about 600 miles west of Land's End, they had a terrible fire. They had to flood the fore magazine, buckle the decks, and they had to come back to Devonport for a big refit. Well, this second time, she'd finished a refit and was going out again. And halfway between England and the Azores, we got one hell of a gale. And, a terrific one. Well, we got the Azores. We spent a couple of days there, just cold there, I think, I don't know what for. Then we went out to the West Indies and went to Trinidad in the end. And we had to wait. We were there 3 months standing by to go to Belize and British Honduras. They're having trouble with the natives there. They always had trouble with them there. And the other cruiser, one of the other cruisers was there, and they'd landed Marines, and in some scuffle, a Marine banted a Negro, and that set it off. Now, a lot of these natives had been in Europe, or some were connected with the war, and they weren't, you know, they had their eyes open. They were not the same as when they were before. Anyway, we waited quite a while, and we didn't have to go there. We were there 3 months, that was it, yeah. And eventually got back to Bermuda, and when we were there, the Calliope was surveyed on account of this gale, and she was condemned. The forecastle stanchions were all buckled, and sent back to England. And I was damn lucky. There was a mate in the Constance who misbehaved himself or something and been going to be sent back to England in the Calliope, you see. And all these on the Calliope, they brought cricket gear for 2 years out there and all this stuff, and so that. Anyway, I joined the Constance. And I was a sub there, and this fellow D.C. Hill was with me there, sub. And from there, what I remember the next thing is we were in Bermuda. And the CNC then was a different one. I've forgotten his name now. Living at Avonlea House on the North Shore. Now, all the drinking water is in catchments all over Bermuda, you know, rainwater catchments, and they have tanks. Well, somehow they got typhoid, I think it was, in the Avonlea House once, and the admiral and one of his staff died. And we had to take his widow and, I don't know, his children or not, to Boston to catch a ship back to England. Well, we went to Boston, and there was a French sloop in there, too. And we were warned that it was dangerous to go uptown. We'd be followed by Irishmen. You know, the feeling was very bad, and especially around there, the Irishmen. And we did walk up once, and nothing happened. And we went to a big dinner the governor of Massachusetts gave, and he had to be tactful. He had the French captain one side and the British on the other, you see, and he had to look out for his politics at the same time. Anyway, from there we went to, they had a ceremony at Provincetown on Cape Cod, landing of the Pilgrim Fathers. And we had to go out there. And there's a couple of American battleships out there, too, and we sent a small party ashore to join in this. And the Americans then couldn't march. Oh, terrible, you know. They're marching, couldn't keep step or anything. And I don't know about the Navy, but the Coast Guard couldn't for a long time after that. And took part in this thing. And then from there, we went up to Halifax to pay off and recommission. And this is where it gets tricky, where things happen. Well, we went to Halifax, and one or two of the old commission stayed on, amongst whom was a paymaster, who proceeded to get tight and sit in his cabin, and the new commission came on, and the paymaster, all he could hear out of his cabin, "Get off the strawberry bed!" Anyway, it wasn't a very happy ship. And we had this Captain Kennedy, I think it was, and yeah, I just got court-martialed in England. Anyway, we went to St. John, and we were inside there, and we had visitors on board showing them over, and this damn captain came up to me and said, "Your damn Navy is no damn good. Your own people haven't got any use for you." That's a nice thing to say to a young chap starting out, you know. Well, I took his life to him right away. And then we went back to Bermuda, and I don't know what happened to him, but we got a nice captain, the Honorable A.C. Strutt. And, well, I think this fellow went back to England. And Strutt was very nice. We went down the West Indies with him, and we were down in Jamaica. And I was appointed back for short courses, but my relief hadn't arrived. And my relief was Windier from Duncan's here.
No.
But he hadn't arrived, you see. And the Canadian squadron came in there then. And they were going to go through the Panama Canal up the West Coast. And my father had been not well, hadn't been well out here at all, you see. And if I hadn't got home then, I'm 2 years, he might not survive. So I went to our captain and said, "Could I apply to go around one of the Canadian destroyers?" And I said, "Windier be joining up here in a very short time." And he said, "No, as far as I'm concerned, all right, but you've got to see Captain Adams, the captain. He's an IRN captain. Come out in the Aurora cruiser." So I went over there, and Adams was in Suffern, and they were an awful rowdy crowd. Gee, they drank me bad. And they were all drinking gins and everything. They gave me about, I don't know how many gins before I went in to see them. And I had to spiel off this story about my father being ill and sort of some sort of story. And he said, "I don't believe a word you say." He said, "We happen to be shorthanded. You can go around one of the destroyers." So I came around, and the patrician, the G.C. Jones, was the captain of the patrician now.
And that'd be really the first time that you'd served on board a Canadian ship.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, I guess. Yeah.
Did you find any particular difference between the British and Canadian ships?
Well, this Canadian squadron arrived in Trinidad. It wasn't a very good-looking sight. The Aurora was heeled away over. Apparently, if they used a little bit of fuel out of tanks on one side, she immediately got a big list on. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I had to trim tanks all the time.
Wasn't the time the Aurora got caught in the gale down there, was it?
We did have a gale off Salina Cruz. I don't...
What was the Aurora? Did you ever run into John Betts, for example?
Who?
John Betts, or Commander Roland.
The name Roland seems familiar.
They were in similar era in this time.
Betts,
B-E-T-T-S? Yes.
Oh, Betts. Yeah, he was a signalman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's in Victoria now.
I didn't know he was a commander now.
Well, he's not a commander, though. He's Commander Roland. He was
Yeah.
He retired
as
lieutenant.
Yeah, well, he was a yeoman of signals at that time. Well, yes, we came up. We went through Panama and came up, and we were there for their Mardi Gras celebration. We came up the coast and right off Salina Cruz, which is on the Mexican border, south border, you know. They get these northers. They come right across from the Gulf of Mexico, blow west. They're really sort of almost like a hurricane. You know, we got soused out there, and we had to come in and make fast to a buoy, and our line was absolutely bar-taut all night there. Next morning, the pier's like this, and a little gut entrance here, and we had to come in. It's fairly shallow, and we were going to come in, and the Patrick to come in ahead of us was Commander Beard, and gone and drifted down broadside on alongside this jetty inside there. And they'd all got their wind scoops out of the portholes, you know, let air in. Brass wind scoops, every damn wind scoop was flattened.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
Well, from there, we went out. We went up to Acapulco. And you shouldn't see an Acapulco then. I'm going to use all your time up on this, aren't we?
Yeah, no, but we only have about 15 more minutes to go.
Well, 5 minutes it takes, sir.
Hey,
pardon? About 5 minutes on this.
So five more, and then what we'll try and do is get you later then, to get more, but not we can't get all today.
No.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have spent all the time on
this. No. But you get home. Let's put it this way. We'll have to leave Acapulco.
Yeah.
And get you home. And how is your father when by the time you do get home?
Well, he got awful headaches. Oh, he got flaked out. And doctor, I've gotten his name now, is an ex-serviceman, doctor in Duncan there. He treated him a lot.
Yeah. What was he doing, by the way, here? Just farming or what?
No, he just got this place as a residence and lived on his pension here.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see.
And he couldn't do much at the end. He got these terrible headaches and eventually died of a stroke.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
So this would be, what year would this be when you come home? With the Canadian ship.
That's, well, it was April, let me see, what did I say, April, May, I think we're down Acapulco in March, is that right? Yes, it was a different year from us in France there. I think it was about April, this end here.
About April 1920.
Yeah. And I had 7 days to go home, see my father,
mm-hmm.
Then I had to skip it back to England.
Back to England again?
Uh-huh.
When are we going to get you in the Canadian League?
Well,
this
is when I went back to the coal strike, the next thing, you see. Coal strike in England. And I went back and... See, we did the short courses, didn't we? Them have me pick
it's a long time ago.
Piece it together, yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
I had 7 days here, and then, I met up with Creary, and we met up with a fellow, Woodward, in the car. Coal strike was 1920, I think. I got it down here. That lasted about 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And on completion of the coal strike, I'll pay it off. And I hadn't done my short courses, so I did short courses after that. Yes, I did, because all this army routine we did up there helped us tremendously in doing our gunnery field exercises and during the short courses. After short courses, I was appointed to Harebell. Yeah.
Another British ship.
She was Captain Auxiliary Patrols. And she was the one, we had the 7 twin screw mine sweepers and the trawlers, local fishery naval officers, all the fishery districts around England. Once a year they came down in January and did mine sweeping exercises.
Oh, I see.
And that's where I met this Commander Benson. And he was the inventor of the Oropesa sweep, which revolutionized from the wartime thing. It had a thing called the Actian, which I never saw.
Mm-hmm.
And these mine sweepers, they had a sweep went out like this, you see, and the next sweep would be in the ground covered by the one ahead, so on, like that, in four line.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot from him. And we, after that, we were ordered to go to Grimsby, where the Admiralty and the fishing companies were arranging for us to go up and protection of the fisheries off the north of Russia there. The Russians declared a 12-mile limit, see, and British only recognized 3.
Oh, yeah.
And that went up previously, they'd seized one of our trawlers up there and anchored it, and some of the crew got drowned as an exposed anchorage, and it was a hell of a kerfuffle.
Oh, yeah.
So we went up there, and we went to... outside the Lofoten Islands and into Tromso,
mm-hmm.
where the governor of the province of Tromso had his residence. And I got a damn funny story there, too. The captain went short of call on the governor, and there's a great big stone building right opposite where we were anchored, only a few hundred yards away. And the captain said, "Now, my captain, governor's sending his sleigh for me, and you'll see the sleigh draw up alongside. When you, as soon as you see that leave, send a boat in for me to come back with." So I waited and waited and waited, and lunchtime happened, and I went down below to have a meal and told the signalman to watch out, and he came down and said, "Beg pardon, sir, captain's coming off in the shore boat, and he doesn't look at all happy." God, he got the gangway. He said, "Boy, I'll see you later." He couldn't speak. He's so angry. Well, later on, he sent for me, and he said, "Why did you send the boat in?" And I said, "Well, sir, the sleigh's still there." "Oh," he said, "yes." He said, "Our sleigh went up on the other side. You couldn't see it from here." All the small Norwegian boys had been making fun of him for about an hour. The landing stage. Well, anyway, after that, we went up then to this place, Kirkness, and we sailed up past the coast of Finnmark, and I think it was called, past the North Cape and round the top. And it was in a sort of fog and rough sea up there that I just avoided a Russian trawler that was going to collide with us and put the helm over. And I yelled for the captain to come up, and when he got up, the thing disappeared. We were still going around in a circle. I hadn't taken the helm off. Anyway, I said, "Well, that's got clear of this one, even if we go around in a circle." So and I was quits in with him after that, and he forgave me this incident of the...
And, yeah. Well, I think we'll end it at that point. Yeah. We're just about out of our tape, Commander Barron.
You haven't been taping this, have you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you have?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, that's good. I know, it wasn't a sound. Because the other one, you know, he'd stop it, and then I'd think a bit more and go ahead.
Yeah. No,
oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I thought you were not kind.